So, we are continuing on our study of bearing false witness or the sin of lying. We okay, Doug? Okay. Or the sin of lying. We're going through the Westminster Larger Catechism, and I wanted to start this morning with Psalm 28, which is the beginning of your handout. So let's just read through this. Psalm 28. To you, O Lord, I call, my rock, be not deaf to me, lest if you be silent to me, I become like those who go down to the pit. Hear the voice of my pleas for mercy when I cry to you for help, when I lift up my hands toward your most holy sanctuary. Do not drag me off with the wicked, with the workers of evil, who speak peace with their neighbors while evil is in their hearts. Give to them according to their work and according to the evil of their deeds. Give to them according to the work of their hands. Render them their due reward. Because we do not regard the works of the Lord, because they do not regard the works of the Lord or the work of his hands, blessed be the Lord, for he has heard the voice of my pleas for mercy. The Lord is my strength and my shield. In him my heart trusts, and I am helped. My heart exults, and with my song I give thanks to him. The Lord is the strength of his people. He is the saving refuge of his anointed. O save your people and bless your heritage. Be their shepherd and carry them forever. You know, a lot of this psalm is about language, okay? And that's what we're talking about here, isn't it? We're talking about speaking to one another. We're talking about just speaking just in and of itself. I mean, how do we take a thought that's in our mind, which is pretty clear to us, how do we express that? How do we get it out to somebody else? Well, that's real difficult. And you know, we're never perfectly successful at that. Because it's clear here, and really, in fact, it is clear in your head a lot of the time. But how do I express that to you? How do I have a conversation with you? And that's what this psalm is all about. Partly, of course. To you, O Lord, I call. Okay? To you, O Lord, I call. My rock, be not deaf to me. He's looking for a conversation. He's looking for a relationship, isn't he? Lest if you be silent to me, I become like those who go down to the pit. If you be silent to me, if God doesn't talk to us, okay? And God does. We know he does in his word and in his providence, okay? He's speaking to us. He speaks in his way, in his very powerful way, differently than what we do, right? We're using words and we have difficulty getting our thoughts through. But we plead for God to speak to us. To you, O Lord, I call, be not deaf to me. If you be silent to me, I become like those who go down to the pit. I become like those who are not the people of God. Okay? Hear the voice of my pleas for mercy when I cry to you for help, when I lift up my hands toward your most holy sanctuary. Listen to me. Listen to my pleas. In addition, he mentions here a bit of worship, doesn't he? He approaches God in language, and then finally he comes to this idea of adoration, of worship of God, too. So our language, even in our frustration with language, takes us to a worship of God. Do not drag me off with the wicked, with the workers of evil, who speak peace with their neighbors while evil is in their hearts. There's a definition in that verse, okay? Those two parts are parallel. Do not drag me off with the wicked, with the workers of evil. The wicked, the workers of evil. Who are those? He defines it. Who speak peace with their neighbors while evil is in their hearts. That's what the wicked is all about. Do we realize most of the time when we're talking about sin, we're talking about doing things, aren't we? We did something bad to this person, or we neglected this or that. We neglected God. We neglected our worship. But here, the psalmist is defining what the wicked are, who speak peace with their neighbors while evil is in their heart. There's one thing in their heart, in their mind, and they're speaking something different. Okay? We do this all the time, don't we? Do we really clearly give to other people what's on our minds? Do we do that? Not really. Okay? We'll speak more about that. But that's duplicity, what we call duplicity. One thing's in our heart, and we're saying something else, okay? And this is what the psalmist defines as being wicked, okay? As being really reprobate, okay? Speak peace with their neighbors while evil is in their hearts. We do that as Christians, but those people who are immersed in that, okay, are those who are not people of God. God, relationship with God has to do with language, with speaking, both to God and to each other. Give to them according to their work and according to the evil of their deeds. Give to them according to the work of their hands. Render them their due reward. There's this separation, isn't there? Two different kinds of people. We know this as Reformed Christians, okay? We have the elect and we have the reprobate too. What's the difference between these two, okay? Difference is whether you're dependent on God. Where do you see? What is your position in your life? Is your position one of seeing your total dependence of God? God made you. God sustains you, okay? Without God, there is nothing. Without God, you are nothing, okay? So this, in verse 4, is expressing this difference between these two groups, this marked contrast between these two groups of people. One who recognizes their dependence on God, and the other that does not or rebels against that dependence upon God, who denies it. Verse 5, because they do not regard the works of the Lord or the work of his hands, he will tear them down and build them up no more. Again, they don't see that God is our sustenance. Blessed be the Lord, for he has heard the voice of my pleas for mercy. Again, we approach God in language. He approaches us the same way. The Lord is the word, after all. Okay? It's a very important thing. We deal with language and words all the time. How we deal with those is really, really important. The Lord is my strength and my shield. In him my heart trusts, and I am helped. My heart exults, and with my song I give thanks to him. Okay? The psalmist has received something, right, from God. He's received sustenance. He's received blessing, okay? As a result of that, he recognizes his dependence upon God as well, doesn't he? We receive something from somebody, that means that we're dependent upon them, at least for that one little thing. I don't care what it is. Give you a candy bar, give you a dollar, give you whatever. You're dependent on that person for that thing. When we receive from God and we acknowledge, okay, that we are receiving from God, we're showing, we're acknowledging that we're dependent upon him, that our hearts are in that position, that we know that we're totally, totally dependent upon God. The Lord is the strength of his people. He is the saving refuge of his anointed. He kind of accentuates here, doesn't he? He is not only the provider, but he's the strength. He's the thing that keeps us going. He is the saving refuge of his anointed. Oh, save your people and bless your heritage. Be their shepherd and carry them forever. Total dependence, right? Total dependence. You know, we see ourselves as actuating our own lives every day, okay? And since we're talking about language, okay, we see that too, don't we? We think that we're in control of our language, that we're in control of truth, okay? But we don't do very well with that, do we? Okay? We don't express ourselves well. We just say, well, I'm sort of dumb. I don't do well with English. I don't do well with making sentences, those kinds of things. We could say that. But we also know that a lot of the things that we say are not consistent with what's in our hearts, okay? Sometimes we don't express as well as we should. And sometimes we don't want to express what's in our hearts, okay? Sometimes we want to deceive other people, okay? This is the duplicity thing. One thing in my heart, okay? Another thing in my language. And that language that you issue to somebody else is really sort of an assault, okay, on that other person. You're telling them a lie. You're telling them something that's different than what is true, okay? Different than what's in your heart, okay? And so this is what we're talking about. It's really an extensive discussion. This will be our third week dealing with the Westminster Larger Catechism on this. This has been a litany of stuff that is categorized by the Larger Catechism as bearing false witness, of lying. And if you guys are anything like I am, I read through this very, very long list of things, and I go, that's lying? Wait a minute, how is that lying? You have to figure it out. Remember, we started out this study with the idea of provocation, okay? That question comes up. How is this particular thing that they list lying? Okay, how is it? But it is. If we look at this closely, we can see that these are instances of not expressing ourselves according to our hearts, okay, but also according to the truth, okay? And, of course, God is truth. Whenever you're not expressing God, whenever you're not expressing truth, okay, that's a lie to some extent. And that's why this list is so long, okay, because many of the things that we do are not expressing the truth of God. They are bearing false witness about God, okay? And so all these little different ramifications that were given in the larger catechism are instances of not, you shouldn't point. Didn't they teach you that? Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
Well, a verse is right here in mind, speaking the truth and love.
Yes.
And it seems like there are some certain situations, circumstances where all of the information to a person would be very hurtful.
Yep. Mm-hmm. No, no. And actually, this paragraph, this particular paragraph, we're doing the second half of it, expresses exactly what you said. Okay? And that's why this is so pervasive. Okay? And actually, this paragraph isn't long enough. It's long, but it's not long enough, expressing just the kinds of things that you're talking about. They tried to be exhaustive, but we'll get to that. And I think it expresses it very well. So we'll hold that for later. Okay? I'm going to take a quick read here. Through the second half of this answer to question 145, what are the sins forbidden in the ninth commandment? Okay, and I'm going to begin. I hope you can find it. I have it underlined on mine, but speaking is where we're starting. About, I don't know, six or seven lines down. Speaking the truth unseasonably. Okay, I actually set Glenda up for that. The reason she asked that question is that's right where we start, isn't it? Okay. This is what Glenda's talking about. Speaking the truth unseasonably. Speaking the truth unseasonably in a bad way. Sometimes it's not the right thing to deliver the truth, as Glenda says. Okay, speaking the truth unseasonably or maliciously to a wrong end, or perverting it to a wrong meaning, or in doubtful or equivocal expressions to the prejudice of truth or justice. We're going to discuss this in a little more detail, so don't get wound up with the language here. Just try to get a sense of what they're saying. Speaking untruth, lying, slandering, backbiting, detracting, talebearing, whispering, scoffing, reviling, rash, harsh, and partial censuring, misconstructing intentions, words, and actions, flattering, vainglorious, boasting, thinking or speaking too highly or too meanly of ourselves or others, denying the gifts and graces of God, aggravating smaller faults, hiding, excusing, or extenuating of sins when called to a free confession, unnecessary discovering of infirmities, raising false rumors, receiving and countenancing evil reports, and stopping our ears against just defense, evil suspicion, envying or grieving at the deserved credit of any, endeavoring it or desiring to impair it, rejoicing in their disgrace and infamy, scornful contempt, fond admiration, breach of lawful promises, neglecting such things as are of good report, and practicing or not avoiding ourselves or not hindering what we can in others, such things as procure an ill name. Okay? There's a lot there. Okay? And Glenda gave us a good introduction to that. So there's a lot there. And some of these things are hard to understand, but we're going to try to talk them out today, try to get to some of the truth that is here. I would recommend that you read, you know, these several paragraphs, these several questions, 143 to 145, because there's so much of our lives that are tied up in this idea of whether you're representing the truth or not, okay? And I think the larger catechism gives us a good sense of that. So let's begin with this. I want to start with rash, harsh, and partial censuring, okay? What does that mean? Okay, censuring means changing a bit what has been said or what has been represented, doesn't it? Okay. Rash, harsh, or partial censuring. A couple of examples here. Genesis 38:24. This is Judah, who had a relationship with Tamar, his daughter-in-law, and she is actually caught in the act, or she's not caught in the act, but she's caught later on as she had become pregnant. And so Genesis 38:24, about 3 months later, Judah was told, Tamar, your daughter-in-law has been immoral. Moreover, she is pregnant by immorality. And Judah said, bring her out and let her be burned. Okay. Now, we know this story. Okay. The one that she had been unfaithful with was Judah himself. Right. And so Judah has to be brought to task here as well. And he, in this circumstance, he is not relating to the fact that he has not managed his daughter-in-law well, okay? And he hasn't also managed his own personal life well. And yet he has this strong reaction, this rash censuring, this rash giving of discipline to Tamar, bring her out and let her be burned. So the Bible, as it goes along after the story, fleshes out the story entirely, doesn't it? Gives us the facts. We've been given the facts all along. And there's a bit of untruth. There's a lot of untruth in what Judah has done here. He puts the blame entirely on Tamar, and yet there was some truth of God in the whole situation. So why do we think that we can censure people at all? I mean, we do this all the time, don't we? I mean, I think our society trains us to do this. We listen to the news and we go, that's wrong, that's wrong, that's wrong, that's wrong. Our whole life is tied up in this, isn't it? So we're trained by our society to think in these ways of censuring other people. Look at Romans 2:1. Therefore, you have no excuse, O man, every one of you who judges. For in passing judgment on another, you condemn yourself, because you, the judge, practice the very same thing. Okay. Here we go. So we practice the same things. We accuse people, other people of things, and we practice the same thing. Why do we know that they're doing something wrong? Okay, because we're experts at what they are doing. We recognize it in them. And that's what this is saying here. Drew and I recognize this in our lives all the time, not only in ourselves, but others. And all we have to say to each other is Romans 2, okay? We're accusing other people of things that we know that we have done wrong. When we're accusing or censuring other people, okay, we should be examining why we know that so well. Is it the right thing to censure them, especially as we do? We're often very rash about this. We're too hair-trigger about what we do. The next phrase in the larger catechism, misconstructing intentions, words, and actions. We might say today misconstruing. You might be more familiar with that word. But misconstructing intentions, words, and actions. Well, we know that this happens all the time. We know we do it ourselves. Look at Nehemiah. Very clear example, I think. Nehemiah 6:6-8. In it was written, it is reported among the nations, and Geshem also says it, that you and the Jews intend to rebel. That is why you are building the wall. And according to these reports, you wish to become their king. And you have also set up prophets to proclaim concerning you in Jerusalem. There is a king in Judah. And now the king will hear of these reports. So now we come and let us take counsel together. Then I sent him saying, no such things as you say have been done, for you are inventing them out of your mind. Okay? So, they're accusing Nehemiah of trying to become the king. He's trying to do this work, isn't he? The return to Jerusalem. And yet he's accused of setting himself up as a king. And again, he defines this business of duplicity or lying, no such things as you have done, have as you say have been done, for you are inventing them out of your own mind. Okay? Just a pretty clear example in the Bible. Misconstruing Romans 3:8, and why do not do evil that good may come? As some people slanderously charge us with saying, their condemnation is just. This is Paul saying that he's been accused of misinterpreting the law of God. Okay, and why not do evil that good may come? Okay, it's kind of silly, isn't it, when you think about it? Okay, well, I'll do something bad and that'll glorify God, because perhaps I'll be punished for it, and the world will see that it's a bad thing. Why not do evil that good may come? Well, Paul didn't speak that way, and he was accused of that. His words were misconstrued, perhaps misunderstood, but more likely misconstrued. Somebody was actively trying to defame him. Other people criticize and reproach the humility of the Christian before God. Psalm 69:10. When I wept and humbled my soul with fasting, it became my reproach. You know, when you show a godly appearance, when you try to do the best you can, you try to be honest, you try to do a good job, you try to be humble, perhaps you're living in that way because you know that God is your sustenance, okay? The world wants to criticize you about that, and that's what Psalm 69:10 is saying. When I wept and humbled my soul with fasting, it became my reproach, okay? When you're close to God, when you see him as your sustenance, okay, the world doesn't like that, okay? Not only because it convicts them, but they don't understand that God is their sustenance. They rebel against the fact that God is their sustenance, okay? And so they criticize you for that, okay, for being humble before God. As men, okay, in the modern non-Christian circles, okay, we're supposed to be powerful over everything. We're supposed to be executing everything ourselves. We're not supposed to be humble before God. We're not supposed to be bringing forth his truth and executing what God would want us to execute in this life. And so we're criticized for that. You remember the story of Hannah. She was accused of drunkenness when she was in fervent prayer. You remember she was moving her lips, and Eli thought she was drunk because she was sitting there just moving her mouth and not really uttering any words. Hannah was speaking in her heart, only her lips. This is 1 Samuel 1:13-15. Hannah was speaking in her heart, only her lips moved and her voice was not heard. Maybe that's better sometimes, isn't it? Right? Maybe sometimes if our words don't come out because we distort them so much, maybe it's better. Hannah was speaking in her heart. It's a representation of what was going on. There was a dialogue going on between Hannah, between her heart and God. And no words were coming out. She was moving her lips. Only her lips moved and her voice was not heard. Therefore, Eli took her to be a drunken woman. And Eli said to her, "How long will you go on being drunk? Put your wine away from you." But Hannah answered, "No, my Lord, I am a woman troubled in spirit. I have drunk neither wine nor strong drink, but I have been pouring out my soul before the Lord." Okay? That direct communication between Hannah and God, pouring out her soul. Not only that, she's actually being criticized, so similar to in the Psalm 69:10 that we just talked about, right? She's a humble person. She knows what her shortcomings are. She knows that she is troubled in spirit, as she says. Okay, but I have been pouring out my soul before the Lord. Eli even criticizes her for that, this direct communication, this humility that she has. But this is an example of what Hannah is doing being misconstrued. Look at 2 Samuel 10:3. But the princes of the Ammonites said to Hanun, their lord, "Do you think because David has sent comforters to you that he is honoring your father? Has not David sent his servants to you to search the city and spy it out and to overthrow it?" Okay? David had actually sent to honor his father, okay, to honor Hanun's father. But the other Ammonites were tried to turn Hanan away from David by misinterpreting what David was doing. Pretty clear in that episode, if you read that through again. David was trying to honor Hanan's father, and yet the others are misconstruing his actions by describing them differently. So the next phrase in the larger catechism, flattering, vainglorious boasting, thinking or speaking too highly or too meanly of ourselves or others. So flattering, we know what that is. We know that the Bible speaks against it. From when everybody here was very young, they heard this in the Bible and in their Sunday school, Psalm 12, 2 to 3. Everyone utters lies to his neighbor with flattering lips, and a double heart they speak. May the Lord cut off all flattering lips, the tongue that makes great boasts. There's a lot in here about what we're talking about, isn't there? Everyone utters lies to his neighbor, okay? That's a pretty broad statement, isn't it? Okay? Everyone, okay? Includes you and me, all right? We do this all the time. We don't express ourselves the way that we should. And the psalm means everyone here. It doesn't mean just the reprobate. It says everyone. Everyone utters lies to his neighbor with flattering lips and a double heart they speak. Flattering lips. Flattery, okay, you try to build somebody up in a false way, right? For what purpose? To gain something for yourself normally, isn't it? Okay. So flattering lips, a double heart. That's duplicity, okay? Try to get that word in your minds, because this is a lot of what we're going to be talking about, duplicity. One thing in your heart, another thing out of your mouth. That's duplicity, and that's lying. It's a good definition of lying, actually. May the Lord cut off all flattering lips, the tongue that makes great boasts. Okay, these are things that separate us from God. That's what the psalmist is saying. May the Lord cut off all flattering lips, the tongue make great boasts. Okay? Vainglorious boasting, that's kind of an old word. Vainglorious is what? Excessive pride, okay? Excessive building up of yourself or your achievements, okay? I do that all the time, you guys know that, okay? That's my nature, all right, to build myself up. Excessive pride of oneself or one's achievement. 2 Timothy 3:2, for people will be lovers of self, lovers of money, proud, arrogant, abusive, disobedient to their parents, ungrateful, unholy. And very similarly in Romans 1:28 to 32, we use this so much, I think you guys will remember this. And since they did not see fit to acknowledge God, God gave them up to a debased mind to do what ought not to be done. They were filled with all manner of unrighteousness, evil, covetousness, malice. They are full of envy, murder, strife, deceit, maliciousness. They are gossips, slanderers, haters of God. Gossips, slanderers, haters of God. This language that we use, this duplicity, okay, puts us in a position where we're in opposition to God. They are gossips, slanderers, haters of God, insolent, haughty, boastful, inventors of evil, disobedient to parents, foolish, faithless, heartless, ruthless. Though they know God's righteous decree that those who practice such things deserve to die, and not only do them, but give approval to those who practice them. You know, talking about reprobation mainly here, isn't it? What is the difference between being in Christ and being not in Christ or being reprobate? Okay, we know this. This is stuff you guys all know, but it's good to consider it again. Our sustenance is entirely from God. Our being is entirely from God. Okay, and when we don't speak truth, that separates us from God. Okay? There are people, not Christians, who will spend their whole lives that way. Here it tells us that this is a total separation from God. That it's not only that they're not speaking the truth of God, but they know that they're not speaking the truth of God, okay? Though they know God's righteous decree that those who practice such things deserve to die, they not only do them, but give approval to those who practice them, okay? So people do have a sense of the law of God, and in active rebellion, they distort the truth. We do that also. Each one of us does that individually. The reprobate does it in a different way than we do, because we know our dependence. We know our infirmity, okay? We know our inability, okay? And we go to God just like the psalmist did in our first psalm today. Goes to God asking for sustenance, realizing that that's where our sustenance is. The difference between us and those who are not people of God is that we know our sustenance is in Him. We are totally dependent upon Him. They either don't know it or know it and rebel against it. It's all about speaking untruth, okay? The next phrase from the larger catechism, thinking or speaking too highly or too meanly of ourselves or others, okay? We talked about vainglorious types of things, exalting ourselves. Luke 18:9-11, Pharisee and the tax collector. He also told this parable to some who trusted in themselves that they were righteous and treated others with contempt. Two men went up into the temple to pray, one a Pharisee and the other a tax collector. The Pharisee, standing by himself, prayed thus, God, I thank you that I am not like other men, extortioners, unjust, adulterers, or even like this tax collector. So he's exalting himself, and we know from the outworking of this further on that, the tax collector was the one that was humble before God, okay? Pharisee was not. He exalted himself. Romans 12:16, live in harmony with one another. Do not be haughty, but associate with the lowly. Never be wise in your own sight, okay? 1 Corinthians 4:6, I have applied all these things to myself and Apollos for your benefit, brothers, that you may learn by us not to go beyond what is written, that none of you may be puffed up in favor of one against the other. Okay? That none of you may be puffed up. Exodus 4:10-14. This is Moses talking to God, this conversation between God and Moses, when God told Moses to go out and, declare God's will. But Moses said to the Lord, Oh, my Lord, I am not eloquent, either in the past or since you have spoken to your servant, but I am slow of speech and tongue. Then the Lord said to him, Who has made man's mouth? Who makes him mute or deaf or seeing or blind? Is it not I, the Lord? Now, therefore, go, and I will be your mouth and teach you what you shall speak. But he said, Oh, my Lord, please send someone else. Then the anger of the Lord was kindled against Moses, and he said, Is there not Aaron, your brother, the Levite? I know that he can speak well. Behold, he is coming out to meet you, and when he sees you, he will be glad in his heart. So God calls Moses to what? To declare God's will. Moses says, I can't do it. Okay, this is that situation of speaking of yourself too meanly. Okay. God puts you in a position, and yet you say, I can't do it. You suppress yourself, and that often is, a rebellion against God as well. How many times do we not step up when we should step up, okay? I think I have too much of my work still in me. I still talk about sitting in these meetings where nobody says anything, and they know that they need to say something, that something's wrong. How many times do we not step up? How many times do we not declare the Lord's will? How many times do we not declare the Lord in our situations in life? So denying the gifts and graces of God is the next phrase. Job 4:1-6. Job is a bit difficult in a lot of its parts, but let's try to get the sense of this here. Job 4:1-6. Then Eliphaz the Temanite answered and said, If one ventures a word with you, will you be impatient? Yet who can keep from speaking? Behold, you have instructed many, and you have strengthened the weak hands. Your words have upheld him who was stumbling, and you have made firm the feeble knees. And now it has come to you, and you are impatient. It touches you, and you are dismayed. Is not your fear of God your confidence, and the integrity of your ways your hope? Okay? Denying the gifts and graces of God. The question, the final question there in verse 6 that Eliphaz asks is, Is not your fear of God your confidence? We do that sometimes, don't we? Okay? We say we're Christians. I fear God. It's my fear of God which assures my life for me. Right? I'm a faithful person. Okay? I pray a lot. I go to church, so forth and so on. This is what protects me. Right? This is what we think sometimes, isn't it? But Eliphaz is saying here, is not your fear of God your confidence? It shouldn't be that way. It's not your fear of God. It's God himself. We think it's our faith. And we think it's what we can conjure up in terms of faith that saves us. And that's what Eliphaz is saying. Is not your fear of God your confidence? That's wrong. He's saying that that's wrong. And the integrity of your ways your hope? I'm a good guy. All right? I'm trying to do everything right. I'm trying to work hard. I'm trying to do things ethically. Okay? I think it's my integrity that gets me through. That's what Eliphaz is saying. Is not the integrity of your ways your hope? Our integrity should not be our hope. It's God who is our hope, okay? And it's our integrity which expresses our faith in God, expresses that it is God who is our hope, not ourselves. But too often we fall back into this, don't we? I'll be okay. I'm a Christian. I'm an ethical guy. That's what's going to get me through this. No, it's God himself. It's not our faith. It's God himself that gets us through. We know that our sustenance is from him, that our being is from him. Your being in life is from him. That is what gives us hope. It's not that we have strong faith or that we have made a lot of effort, that we have great integrity. It is God himself that is our hope. So the next phrase, aggravating smaller faults, okay? We do that all the time. I put in the reference here, Matthew 7 through 5, about the speck in your brother's eye and the log in your own eye. We all understand that. We always look at the speck in our neighbor's eye and we sort of blow that out of proportion, not realizing we got the log in our own eye. Okay, that's what it's saying, aggravating smaller faults. Okay, we look at others and we can talk a long time about some little thing that somebody else has done wrong. And we're not supposed to do that. Okay, we're not supposed to be aggravating these smaller faults. Hiding, excusing, or extenuating of sins when called to a free confession. Hiding, excusing, extenuating of sins. You guys get a sense that this is like your whole life, right? This paragraph is discussing the way you and I live. What do? We try to hide our sins. Not that we need to be talking about what we do all the time. We don't need to be saying, well, I had to go confess this, 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 and this, okay? But there are times, the larger catechism says, that we're called to free confession, okay? Hiding, excusing, or extenuating of sins, okay? I go back to the meeting again. Everybody's sitting there wondering what went wrong, okay? And I know it was me that went wrong. I was the one that made the mistake. And yet I don't step up and say, sorry, it's my problem. I didn't do the right thing. I didn't do what I should have done. So bearing false witness, okay, has to do with hiding, excusing, and extenuating of sins. Just another small part of our lives. This is the way we live our lives, isn't it? And the larger catechism is calling us from this. Proverbs 28:13, whoever conceals his transgressions will not prosper, but he who confesses and forsakes them will obtain mercy. We're going to be speaking later on, okay, when I do the next section of this, about this idea of confession. What brings us to truth, okay? You know, we're talking about hiding, excusing, extenuating of sins. What brings us to truth, okay? Sometimes it's confession that brings us to truth, okay? It's the fact that we ourselves examine ourselves and confess to God. We finally get to truth as a matter of that, as a result of that. Augustine's great book, the one that we all sort of recognize, what's it called? It's called Confessions. Yeah, Mr. Huber says Confessions. Why? This great book that we have a sense about that Augustine wrote, he calls Confessions because confession often gets you to the truth. Okay? Confession and adoration of God gets the truth. adoration because we know that He is our sustenance, that He is the source of our being. Proverbs 30:20, this is the way of an adulteress. She eats and wipes her mouth and says, I have done no wrong. I can almost not read that. It's so gross, I think. This is the way of the adulteress. She eats and wipes her mouth and says, I have done no wrong. Okay? We hide our faults, don't we? Even when they're very obvious. Genesis 3:12-13, the man said, the woman whom you gave to be with me, she gave me fruit of the tree and I ate. And then the Lord said to the man, what is this that you have done? God said to the woman, what is this that you have done? The woman said, the serpent deceived me and I ate. So they're hiding their faults, aren't they? Okay. It sounds like they're confessing, doesn't it? All right. Well, I did something wrong. But they're really hiding their fault. And you guys know what the fault was. The fault was they were unfaithful to God. They didn't express the fact that God is the source of their being, that they're dependent upon Him, that everything comes to Him. And yet when God confronts them, they talk about something else. It seems like they're confessing, but they're really not. Their real sin was not being faithful to God. It was disobedience. It was failure to be faithful. It's failure to live in that idea that their being and their sustenance comes from God. We need to be living in that all the time. So something different in Adam and Eve's heart than what they expressed. They knew what they did wrong, but they expressed something else. Duplicity again. Genesis 4:9. Then the Lord said to Cain, where is Abel, your brother? He said, I do not know. Am I my brother's keeper? Another diversion, right? We become experts at this, don't we? Okay. We know how to divert somebody else from thinking about what we have done wrong. I think you know that story. You know that diversion. And I won't go into it any further. Jeremiah 2:35. You say, I am innocent. Surely his anger has turned from me. Behold, I will bring you to judgment for saying, I have not sinned. Okay? Behold, I will bring you to judgment for saying, I have not sinned. Okay? So God brings us to judgment simply for lying, does he? There's a duplicity. We know one thing in our heart. We say something else to God. What does that do? It interrupts our relationship with God. You know, language makes our relationships difficult, doesn't it? You know, we try to express to somebody else. We have something in our heart that's pretty clear. We have trouble getting it out in words. When it's delivered to the other person doesn't really understand it the way you understand it. They put something else in their mind about it, and that's the way we communicate. That's difficult, isn't it? You know, when you're trying to hash something out, it becomes very difficult because our language doesn't match up. Our understanding doesn't match up on either end. We can relate this to what our relationship to God is. Okay? How do we relate to God when we have so much trouble expressing ourselves in words? Okay? We come to prayer, right? And remember with Hannah, she was moving her lips, but she was speaking from her heart. Okay? She was trying to speak heart to God, heart to heart there. Our prayers should be the same way. We're speaking from our heart. We're trying to express what is there. Let's see. I'm going to go on now to unnecessary discovering of infirmities, okay? Do we go out and look for other people's problems, okay? Or do we discuss them too openly? Genesis 9:22, a little bit of a complex principle here. Genesis 9:22, and Ham, the father of Canaan, saw the nakedness of his father and told his two brothers outside. We have this phrase, don't uncover the nakedness of, right? That happens a lot. There's a whole section in the law about that. Not uncovering the nakedness of your father, of your mother, of your father's wife, of your father's daughter, of your daughter's, of your mother's daughter, of your cousin, so forth and so on. What is this business of uncovering the nakedness? Is this just physical nakedness? Okay. Is this, some people would interpret this as a sexual thing. Okay. But really, and this is the reference given by the larger catechism, unnecessary discovering of infirmities. Think about that uncovering of the nakedness as unnecessary discovering or speaking about the infirmities of those around you. Are you always looking for what their problems are? And in the case of these ones that the Bible lists, are we talking about it as well? Think about that. It's a bit of a complex thing, but unnecessary discovering of infirmities is also part of bearing false witness. The next phrase, raising false rumors, receiving and countenancing evil reports, stopping of our ears against just defense. This is pretty clear, okay? Raising false rumors, receiving and countenancing evil reports, okay? I mean, we could start the false rumors ourselves, can't we? Okay, sometimes we do that. We may not have enough information. We may know what's true and say something else. We understand that. Receiving and countenancing evil reports, okay? Somebody else is whispering in your ears and you're saying, yeah, that's real interesting. And then passing it on, okay? We do that, don't we? Stopping our ears against a just defense. Somebody gives a just defense and yet we say we don't want to hear it. Okay, we've already made our judgment of that person. We're in Romans 2 again, right? Okay, we're accusing them because we know what their sin is, and yet we don't want to hear what their defense is. We do that. There's a number of verses there I gave you. I'm not going to read them all. Exodus 23:1, Proverbs 29:2, Acts 7:56 and 57, and Job 31, 13 to 14 that express this. Evil suspicion, okay? We know that even from rock and roll songs, right? Evil suspicion. I think Elvis Presley had one about that. That's something we fall into, though, don't we? We fall into constantly thinking evil of others. The next phrase, envying or grieving at the deserved credit of any, okay? Envying or grieving at the deserved credit of any, endeavoring or desiring to impair it, rejoicing in their disgrace and infamy, okay? Kind of our life, isn't it, right? It's kind of our life. Number of citations I gave you there also, since we're coming close to the end of time, I won't read them through. But, you know, those are good examples. These are all examples that were given for with regard to this by the larger catechism. Scornful contempt and fond admiration, okay? We know about scornful contempt, don't we? We judge other people. We say they're lousy people. They did this lousy thing. They did that lousy thing. I don't like them. I hate them, right? So that's scornful contempt. We understand that. But what about fond admiration? Okay? Fond admiration can also be, and often is, bearing false witness. We build somebody up too much, don't we? We follow them. We're groupies, right? You get focused on somebody. Yeah, that's the way I want to be. That's the guy. That's the one I want to follow. That's fond admiration. We need to understand that that very often is a false witness. It's wrong, okay? It's not consistent with the love of God and the realization that God is our sustenance. So fond admiration, this over-admiring, is out of place. It's a way of lying as well. Again, there's a number of references there in that regard. Other phrases I'm just going to run through as we're at the end of the lesson here today. Breaching of lawful promises. You guys understand that. We've made a promise. We're covenant breakers, Romans 1:31 says. 2 Timothy 3:3 uses truce breakers. That's what we do. We've made a promise and we don't fulfill it. And the last phrase, neglecting such things as are of good report, okay? Neglecting such things that are of good report. We should be pulling those things in that are of good report and telling people about those. So neglecting such things as are of good report and practicing or not avoiding ourselves or not hindering what we can in others, such things as procure an ill name. That very last part I want to describe a little bit, because it's really important, okay? Not avoiding bad situations ourselves, okay, not avoiding the lies ourselves. That's one of the things that we do. It's also a method of lying, of bearing false witness, okay? So not avoiding ourselves and not hindering what we can in others, okay? Not getting in the way of others doing the same thing. Such things as procure an ill name. We're not hindering others in giving a bad name to other people, okay? We allow other people to say things that are maybe untrue about somebody else, but maybe true and maybe something that we really shouldn't be talking about, okay? Why is that bearing false witness? Suppose they did something wrong. Okay, Glenda started us out with this. They did something wrong, and we really shouldn't be speaking about it. Okay? Well, you say, they did something wrong. Why can't I say that they did something wrong? Well, the fact of the matter is, it takes you away from what is real truth, which is Jesus Christ himself. We're diverting people's attention away from the way that you and I are supposed to live, which is we're supposed to live in Christ as our being, as our sustenance, okay? So as you read through these list of things that the larger catechism gives us, look at them in the sense, we know these are all sins, okay? But look at them in the sense of bearing false witness. Look at them in the sense that, yes, this is the way that we conduct our lives. And, look and see that this hinders really our seeing God for what he is and honoring him, adoring him, okay, because he is the sustenance of our being, worshiping him, confessing. We confess the way we are. We confess our bad thinking. We confess our lying. We confess the fact that we tear other people down. We confess. That gets us closer to the truth. Remember Augustine's Confessions? But also, this leads us to what? Adoration. Because we see God in his perfection, okay? We see him as the source of our being, okay? Remember, that's the difference between the elect and the reprobate, okay? The elect being those who see God as the source of their being, okay? The reprobate either not seeing it or rebelling against that, okay? Think about that dichotomy a bit. It's good to turn it around in your mind. So this is sort of the end of the introduction. You have had a 3-week introduction on bearing false witness or lying. There's a lot here. You should read these questions and answers over and over and over again and notice them, apply them to yourselves and to your life. You know, look at those things. When I come back, it's going to be, I don't know how many weeks. We'll figure that out somehow. But I'll continue on this. We'll look at this a little more abstractly in terms of what lying is, okay? What duplicity is, and what that has to do with God being the sustenance of our being, okay? And so we'll discuss that more in the future. So why don't we close in prayer?